Welcome to Partnering with Parents, brought to you by the Classical Academies. Join us every other Tuesday as we educate, encourage, and support parents in their role as the primary educator.
I'm Cameron Curry, the CEO for the Classical Academies, and it's exciting to welcome another guest to our podcast. So Regina Darling is with us, and we're going to be talking about social skills and bridging the gap. So Regina, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I've been a speech and language pathologist in the school system and in private practice for the last 21 years. So I've been doing this a long time. I have two teenage boys at home, so I have had to make my box bigger, and I'll tell you what that means later. Anyway, that's pretty much about me.
Two boys at home, teenagers. How fun is that?
Two teenage boys. Yep, it is really fun.
That's awesome. And how long have you been at the Classical Academies?
I have been here since, I believe, 2017 or 18.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I started part-time and then moved into full-time.
Okay. Well, can you tell us briefly or describe social development and what is considered normal, I guess you could say, or even social development?
That's a really tricky question because we have to talk about kind of what is social, right? Mm-hmm. When we need to kind of define what that is. And typically what we mean when we're talking about social skills and social development is the ability to kind of share space with people effectively, right? And so we start doing that as an infant. We look at certain things. We look at when children develop eye contact, something called joint attention, which just means that they're sharing an experience with their parent or a sibling or a friend or another infant or even a teddy bear.
There you go. Okay. So when should parents be concerned that their child is, you know, atypical or experiencing abnormal social development? And can you provide some examples?
Yeah. So what can be kind of tricky about what is abnormal social development is social development is so kind of defined by what their experiences are and what their exposure is. So typically in the early years, we look to see, are they developing things like joint attention? Are they developing eye contact? Are they developing the ability to kind of have a little relationship with parents or siblings, that kind of thing? Typically speaking, we don't see flags, too many big flags, until they are school age. And that's when we kind of see that they are maybe not fitting in the same way as their typically developing peers.
So would a parent necessarily, if they've got a couple different siblings or a couple different children, I should say, would they notice something's different in the home, or would they?
Very likely, yeah. So if somebody has multiple siblings and parents have done this before, then that might, you know, kind of trigger some kind of, I don't want to say warning signs because it's not necessarily a warning sign, but that maybe their child is a little bit different than their siblings. So kids with siblings, you know, develop different skills. They learn how to share. They learn how to kind of share space with these siblings. Somebody who doesn't have siblings might not develop those skills in the same way. So those are the kids typically that we might not really flag until they are in school and do have to share space with others.
So would that be a typical conversation you would start with your pediatrician, or where would a mom and dad start that conversation?
Yeah, typically speaking, yes. Usually the pediatrician is kind of that first line of defense. Unfortunately, pediatricians don't always know what they're looking for. And a lot of times you'll hear them say, wait and see, wait and see, wait and see. And then sometimes the kiddo is 6 years old and they're still waiting and seeing that there's trouble. So pediatrician is a good place to start. If you've got other questions, there are a lot of speech language pathologists and psychologists in the community who specialize in this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And are there a typical website, or is there a typical place where, because you know moms and dads are up
100%.
Late at night, they're Googling, you know, information and stuff.
Yes.
And would you direct them to somewhere?
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Google can be a really scary thing. It can also be
Absolutely.
A really wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
So you want to make sure that you're looking at things that are peer reviewed and have a good reputation. There's a lot of sites in terms of like where you can go to see what is typical development. I would go to more kind of government sites because those are typically not funded by any private party that might stand to benefit financially from certain kinds of services.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would look to see kind of who's getting the money from where you're getting the information.
Okay, all right. Is there a particular site that you rely on as a professional?
I typically look at the American Speech and Hearing Association website because that has a lot of good information on it, and they're not affiliated with any particular program or anything, so they are a little bit more, just a little bit more neutral.
And I've heard it said that sometimes early on moms and dads should look at even going to maybe a hearing specialist, or even maybe the child needs glasses and you didn't even know that.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought that up, actually, because that's one of the things when we see things that are that see differences socially in kids, we kind of need to get to the root of why. Is it truly because they're having a social pragmatic disorder? Is it something like autism spectrum disorder? Is it something like a sensory processing disorder? If kids are experiencing the world in a different way from their typical peers, they're going to develop differently. Mm-hmm. And you nailed it in terms of the hearing test. If kids not hearing what's going on around them, they're not going to be sensitive to those social cues. So that might affect development as well. Vision as well. I think those are the big ones. Autism, attention deficit disorder. If they don't know where to focus their attention and can't focus their attention, then they're not picking up on those social cues.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. So what steps should parents take if they suspect that their child has abnormal social behavior? And I think we've touched on that. Talk to Dr. Google, but be careful.
Be careful, yeah.
Be careful. And then also go see a pediatrician. Is there anything else that you would suggest?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the age of your child, there's a lot of different resources. The San Diego Regional Center here is really great for that, for kiddos under three. Once your child is 3 years old, I would definitely talk to your school district and make an appointment, or at least leave a message at your school district, because they'll be able to point you in the direction of kids over three are taken care of by their school district. So there's preschool programs that they could get into at the age of three.
So for students involved here at the Classical Academies, if a mother or a father, a parent, a guardian had a question regarding the social development of their children, what process should they go through? What should they do?
So I would probably, the first line of defense would be your education specialist, because they're going to know your child the best other than you.
Okay.
As a parent. If they are somebody who is on track, then I would talk to that on track teacher and then just kind of ask their opinion. Are they fitting in within the classroom? Are there certain things that are kind of flagging and difficult? We have to be really careful because of, especially for kids who have been diagnosed with something like autism spectrum disorder or attention deficit disorder, there's a very big movement. We have the benefit now of having all this information from like adult autistic people and adult people with attention deficit. So they've been able to really share their experiences. Mm-hmm. So it's really important, if you've got concerns, to maybe kind of get into Dr. Google a little bit. There's a wealth of information from these people who've lived this online. I just want to make sure that we're comparing kind of apples to apples as opposed to apples to oranges. So if a kiddo has a diagnosed something, we want to make sure that we are also kind of treating the classroom as well and making an open and hospitable place for them to develop socially as well, because they just maybe have a different way of thinking, have a different way of being social. We all have different social styles.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I would say your first line of defense would be your education specialist, then your
classroom
on-track
teacher.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then every campus has a speech and language pathologist, every campus has a counselor, and every campus has a school psychologist as well. And those would all be really excellent resources.
That's great. That's great. It's always good to tell families, you know, if you haven't thought about it, here's what we can provide you. So
yeah, exactly.
So what are one or two of the biggest strategies or tools that you've utilized that have basically proven effectively when you're dealing with this topic?
So I think the most important thing is to find their people. We work on social skills so the kids can develop friendships, but these kids tend to have some special interests. So it's kind of like putting a kid into a social group. Like if I was put into a social group as a child and it was a group about airplanes, I would have been the least social person in the world.
Like, what are we doing? What are we talking about?
Totally. So you have to find their interest, get them in with kids who are interested in the same thing. That way they don't have, that's one less thing that they have to learn, and they can focus on actually being social and making friends within that group, people who share their interests.
Mm. That's a simple way to do that.
It really is. Yeah, it really, really is. Also, you know, find those things that they love and let them love those things, even if it seems a little bit age inappropriate later. I mean, anime is basically just cartoons, right? It's like the teenage version of cartoons. Some of our kids who have social issues and social concerns tend to like things that are considered kind of age inappropriate. But that word is, I don't know, it bothers me, because I feel like if that's something that brings them comfort, then that's something that they should be allowed to explore and love even throughout their lives. I mean, we all know people who have interests that are maybe not age appropriate, right? I know that toys are the same thing as, like, we, as adults, we call it fan gear or paraphernalia.
Oh, there
right?
you
but
go.
Really,
action
they're
figures.
Just toys.
They're not toys. They're action figures.
Exactly.
People.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And plus, it's a great opportunity for parents to really dig in deeper on different topics with their kids, so you can have some family conversation around some of their interests and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say do the same thing within the classroom too. Social skills is not just a one-way street. We don't want to be teaching these kids skills that then they can't use in the classroom because they're not being accepted within their classroom. We need to make sure that other kids are also being taught about different ways that people learn and being open and accepting of different kinds of learners and different kinds of social styles as well.
Now, how is this manifesting itself in your home? You've got the two teenage boys, and so yeah. How are you helping them socially?
So I mentioned in my little intro that I had to make my box bigger. So I grew up in a family of girls. I had no idea what to do with boys when I had these boys. In my mind, they were going to be theater boys, and they would dance, and they would play music, and that's not the case. I got soccer players, so I had to make my box bigger. I had to learn about their interests and kind of put myself into their world.
Mm-hmm. And create opportunities around that.
Absolutely.
So you are gaining some social skills through this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I had to learn a lot of lessons in flexibility.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Well, Regina, as we end our time together today, are there one or two things you'd like to share with families as we kind of maybe summarize our time together?
Yeah, I would just say if you do have any concerns, definitely reach out. Social development, like I said, is kind of really dependent on a lot of things, on the individual student, on the individual environment that they're growing up in. We really want to be careful, especially with our population. I know there's a lot of our population who have chosen homeschooling because things were not going well in their traditional school. Maybe their child was being teased. Maybe their child was being bullied because they have a little bit of a difference. So our kind of mama arms want to wrap ourselves around them and we pull them into homeschool. We need to make sure then if that is the case that we are exposing them to other students so that they can work on those skills and they can kind of get better. We don't want to create a problem where there wasn't necessarily a problem to begin with. Mm-hmm. So expose to things that they love, find their people, whatever that looks like, and just love and accept them the way they are.
Love that. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome so much.
Partnering with Parents is brought to you by the Classical Academies, a group of award-winning public charter schools serving over 4,500 students in Southern California. Suggest a future episode or advertise with us by visiting classicalacademy.com/podcast. Consider subscribing to our channel, leaving us a review, and supporting our Patreon page. Thanks for listening.